afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
All right, today is September 21st, 2025, and before we get rolling here, no pun intended, we're talking about hemp. No, different Roland.
Oh, that's different. Okay.
That ages you, Bill.
Yeah, sorry.
So September 21st, 2025, so this will not be relevant later, and we'll probably replay the show later, but it's super relevant now. If you are unaware, and you live in California, of Prop 50. So Proposition 50 is being put on the ballot on 1st of November, November 6th, I think it is. You will get your ballot beginning of October, and if you care about representation, you would vote no on Prop 50.
What are they going to call it? Is it going to be the Fair Elections Amendment?
Oh, I'm sure. Because they're not going to call it the
Save Our Schools election.
Oh, Save Our Democracy.
Oh, democracy.
Yeah. I just always scribble that out and write Republic. But Prop 50, and if you are unaware that there is a special election coming, please get informed. If you live anywhere in California, actually, you can use ShastaGOP.com as a reference point and go from there and find things in your area. If you live in Shasta County, ShastaGOP.com has locations for signs for you. And also at that site, there's a whole tab filled with information so you can find out what it's about. You can print flyers for yourself, for your neighbors, and just basically kind of get on board. Because honestly, if the people do not turn out for this, kind of like they didn't for the recall of Newsom, we will wind up with four members of Congress in the entire state of California that are Republican. It will effectively crush Republican representation. If you live in the northern part of the state, let's say you live in Modoc County, you will be represented by likely Jared Huffman, who lives in Marin County. So if you're up for atheism and the guy who used to be the lawyer for the Natural Resource Defense Council, he's probably your guy.
Yeah. And he'll go up there all the time and have town halls. And
yeah, he's going to spend tons of time up here. Yeah. He wants to control the whole Klamath River, actually. That was his stated objective. And the next district down will be was drawn for the Speaker Pro Tem of the Sacramento, of the State Senate. And in Sacramento, there's a big fight whether they should support or not. He decided that if he was going to support it, he needed to have a district drawn for him. So they did. So that'll be the new District 1. District 2 will be at the top of the state. Please go look at the maps. So you can find that at ShastaGOP.com. So there is our Prop 50 announcement. Vote no. There might be one other thing on the ballot. I think it might be a sales tax measure in the city of Reading. And I don't think
1%,
there's any... Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's anything else in the rest of the county, and I don't know about the other counties in the state, but it'll probably...
Scary, though. We have an ROV that has no experience running an election,
we have that. But bottom line is if you're all going to get mailed a ballot, so just make sure you talk to your friends and family, regardless of where they live in the state, and wise them up on this, because it's coming fast. Okay. Now...
And that's vote no.
That is vote no. So when you see the yellow and black signs... It's kind of interesting. The signs are yellow and black that say vote no on Prop 50. Yellow and black is the color of caution tape, crime scenes, right? Yellow and black. So it's no accident the signs are all yellow and black. All righty. So we also have Officer Joe, and we have Kathy in with us today because we're talking about hemp. Talking about hemp.
Guess what just came in on my email from SAM, or Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They just came out with an action page, and they are, because the United States Congress is going to vote very soon on legislation that would ban hemp-derived intoxicants like Delta 8 THC. And so on that page, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, very reliable organization, there is an action tab, and you can tell your Congress member to support the ban. So we'd be definitely looking for that.
Hmm. I have to link that on our links page. I will do that for today. So our guest on the phone, just in case four people in the studio wasn't enough, we have roped Jesse LeBlanc into being with us. He goes by Jay, though. It always says Jesse on his email, but everything else comes back Jay. So we're going to call him Jay today. But he is on the phone with us, and he is basically an expert on hemp because we are not. We have lots of good links for you and information, but we thought we should bring someone on who actually knows quite a bit about it. And he graduated from the University of Houston with a bachelor's in mechanical engineering in 1998, graduated summa cum laude, so he's a smart guy. And for over 25 years, he provided services as both an employee and a consultant on the inspection, repair, design, and operation of chemical refined products, gasoline and diesel fuel, and crude oil pipelines for one of the world's largest oil companies. And I'm dying to know how he got into the marijuana thing.
It's all in oil.
Is it because it's everywhere? So his entire bio is on there, but the one thing that I really wanted to point out is that he contributes information, has contributed a chapter, actually, THC and CBD decomposition and terpene hazards. We all know about terpene, right? Isn't that paint remover?
Our aromatics.
What?
Terpenes are aromatics.
Because they smell bad?
There's all kinds of different terpenes. Some are not bad for you, but some are very bad for you. But Jesse knows, and I don't.
Well, interesting. I was an English major, so, you know, like you say aromatics, I think it smells bad, right? So terpene hazards while vaping or dabbing. And, oh, boy, do we have lots of info about that. Just for your, you know, information, at wethepeopleradio.us, we have a pot tab on the top where we have all the shows that have connections to marijuana and all that, and lots of really good information. Also links to other organizations, research information. So don't take our word for it. Read the experts. So, Jay, where would you like us to start on hemp today?
Can y'all hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, great. I appreciate y'all inviting me. This is sort of one of my passions based on, hey, you were curious about why I got involved in this.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too specific, but it had to do with an illegal grow in another state.
Oh.
Near a cabin that we had, and one thing led to the other. Started doing research, got connected with two local reporters. One thing led to the other, you know, met Aubrey Adams and Dr. Randall, Dr. Finn. And it's, you know, just being an engineer, being curious, being analytical, I just started doing a lot of reading because I didn't want this to repeat itself in Texas. But unfortunately, that's where we are now with Governor Abbott's veto of Senate Bill 3. Which was gonna basically outlaw or ban outright all THC products, you know, whether they're natural or synthetic, from a synthetic origin, specifically from CBD.
Hmm.
But I mean, there's a lot of rabbit holes to go down, Aaron. I didn't know if there's something specific y'all wanted to talk about. Well, I guess one of the things that's passionate on my end is the 2018 Farm Bill. The wording, I don't know if anybody's really read those 53 words about what is in the actual law, and I can recite it to you. I have it in front of me. But when you look at that and the terminology being used, you just say, okay, there's no way some of these legislators even knew what some of these words meant. So that, at least from my perspective, it kind of denotes that they were influenced by not doctors, or lobbyists, I'm sorry, doctors or parents, but they were influenced by lobbyists, specifically people with a science background tied to the hemp industry. And you know, once you break it down, I don't know if you want to go down that rabbit hole or if you want to get into synthetics. I have no idea. He contacted me, and it seemed like y'all had some questions. So I don't know where you want to go with this.
Sure. Start with the Farm Bill, because that did open up. I mean, anything that opens this up nationwide, and I get it, with every piece of legislation, you know, I mean, it's commonly referred to as a crap sandwich, you know. It just depends on is there more crap than less crap, and sometimes there's bad stuff in there, and you still have to vote for it. But I'm curious, what did it say about hemp in there? And you said it's 50.
53 words.
Right,
I mean, there's more to it than this.
Sure, but what's it say?
Okay, this is where all the quote-unquote loopholes come in. And this is readily available. There's a link, congress.gov, 115th Congress, Senate Bill 2667. That's sort of probably how you could search for it in Google. But, okay, this is quote-unquote. The term hemp means the plant Cannabis sativa L, and any part of that plant, including the seeds thereof and all, this is where the loopholes come in. And I don't know if they're really loopholes or this wording was specific to allow for those quote-unquote loopholes. Derivatives, extracts, cannabinoids, and I know y'all don't know what isomers are. We kind of know what acids are, but I can allude to that after. Salts of isomers, whether growing or not, with a delta 9 tetracannabinoid THC concentration of not more than 0.3% on a dry weight basis. So that's the 53 words for how they quote unquote define hemp. And some of the things that stand out, you know, they want to say hemp are all derivatives and extracts. So that's, guess what? That's how we have delta 8, THCP, you know, the latest is a hydrogenated cannabinoid to increase the shelf life. You know, like, just so people know, margarine is hydrogenated vegetable oil. Crisco is a classic example of an oil being hydrogenated to thicken it and also increase its shelf life. We know what cannabinoids are. That includes CBD, THC, et cetera, et cetera. And in isomers, I mean, do y'all know what isomers are?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but we're going to assume the public does not, because I'm the public and I've heard of them.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine senators understanding what isomers are? I doubt it. I mean, I can explain it to the audience. It's basically, you know, like THC is composed of 21 carbon atoms, 30 hydrogen atoms, and 2 oxygen atoms. You know, if you've had basic chemistry, you know, you have they call it the molecular formula. Well, CBD has the same number of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. So CBD and THC, and also delta-8, they're isomers of each other. So that's what an isomer is. And then they have acids, and how that relates to all of this is one of the quote-unquote other loopholes is they specifically call out, am I losing anybody yet?
No, you're doing fine.
Okay, great. All right. Because I don't want to get too much in the weeds where I lose people. So the 0.3%, they have the delta 9 THC, like concentration at more than 0.3%. Well, the other loophole is they have THCA, which is the acid version of it. And it's not quote unquote psychoactive, but guess what? All it takes is a little bit of heat, a little bit of storage, maybe some sunlight, some type of heat energy to knock that carboxyl group off of that. And guess what? You have THC. And that's why, you know, when they have, you know, that's a lot of reasons why they smoke it. And even in Texas, they have one vendor, and it's in a certificate of analysis that I looked at a few weeks ago for a parent. They don't have any THC in their product. But guess what? Some of their items have over 20% THCA. Okay? So all it takes is a little bit of heat, storage, et cetera, and it's going to turn into THC. And they're trying to alleviate that. But that's another thing to me that, I mean, you asked the question, was that purposely done that they included acids, you know, like the acid form of THC? And then they have salts of isomers, whether growing or not. So that's telling me it doesn't need to be the plant. It can be, you know, just the plant oil. And all that differentiates hemp from marijuana is that not more than 0.3% on a dry weight basis.
Wow.
So once they convert this to THCA, does that have the same effect on the body as THC?
Yeah, they derate it. Yeah, on the certificate of analysis, because they're getting rid of the carboxyl group. I wish this was, you know, I've got some illustrations, but I can't show it on the radio. But the formula they use is total THC is equal to THCA times 0.877, okay, plus the D9. But basically for it to be the THCA gets derated by, I mean, it's 0.877. Just say it's 90. Let's round that to 90%. We're going to do some engineering math and just round up. But that's roughly 90%. So basically the THCA is probably 90% of the quote-unquote potency of regular THC based on that formula. That's in all of these certificates of analysis that I got from multiple vendors in Texas. I mean, these are available online. And, you know, I looked at this for some parents and also for testimonies and that other people did. And I had, you know, I gave one testimony in person, another one I sent them in, but I don't know if they listened to any of that.
Well, somebody does because they've got more than just one person.
I mean, pretty much.
I'm sorry. We've got to take a really quick break.
Sure.
Not just because we did math, but, you know, we did math, right? We did math, and I wound up a minute late on the break, but, you know, so I'm not good at math. Full confession. We'll be right back. We are talking with Jesse LeBlanc. We are here discussing hemp this morning, and...
The imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. And shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of reentering the atmosphere too soon.
See, that's what the song sounds like when you start singing about math. You're like, wait, what? All right, so you had a burning question.
I did have a burning question, and actually it's about burning. And so, Jesse, when you were speaking about the products that are being sent into gas stations, whatever, and they are non-psychoactive when they arrive at the station, when people smoke that, is it the process of physically smoking, the heating process that converts it right then and there? Is that what's going on, roughly?
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of correct you, Solly, I mean, there may be some THCA by itself in there, but at least one of the loopholes they're using in Texas and other states, I'm sure, is they'll have THCA, again, the acid form of it. And when you heat it, then it knocks off that, they call it a carboxyl group, and you wind up with just the THC delta 9 molecule. And that does the, you know, gives you, that's intoxicating. Yeah.
So,
does that make sense?
So, just a follow-up, when we talk about heating it, are we just talking about smoking it or throwing it in some tea and having hot tea? Like,
The decarboxylation process can occur during processing by the manufacturer if they raise it to 220 degrees or about 104 degrees Celsius for 30 to 45 minutes. But yeah, when it's heated in a cigarette or bong or whatever, and if it's, and if it's THCA, and it's actually the Delta 9 version of it too. It's not a Delta 8 or anything. It's Delta non-THCA, for the A stands for the acid. So once it gets, you know, if you smoked it or vaped it or during the process, you know, when you get that temperature roughly 220 degrees Fahrenheit. Now keep in mind, water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's slightly above boiling point. And also, you know, this is 104 degrees Celsius water bowl. You know, 212 matches with 100 degrees Celsius. So it's rough. That's kind of ballpark number right above the boiling point of water. And, you know, once you get it to that temperature, or if you bake it, cookies or whatever, I mean, usually you have to bake cookies at least 350, 400 degrees. So, yeah, it's going to convert from THCA to just THC. And when I use these terms, I'm talking about the Delta 9 also.
Right, right. Okay, so we've been throwing around Delta 8 and Delta 9 here for a little bit. So for all the people that are going, what are they saying? Can you give sort of like the elevator speech on Delta 8 and Delta 9 and why they care about it?
Tell me if I get too technical too. So Delta 9, the Delta 8, Delta 9, and also Delta 10, you know, like I said, if I had a, you can go online and find this. But basically, let's just focus on the Delta 9, Delta 8, Delta 9. What differentiate those two molecules from one another, they're isomers of each other. They have the same number of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. You know, 21 carbon, 30 hydrogen, 2 oxygen. But the difference is, there's a called the carbon double bond on one of the hexagonal rings. There's 3 rings, and it depends on the clock position. You know, Delta 9 has it in one position, and then Delta 8 has it in another position, just right next to it, next to 9, and then Delta 10 has it on the other side of the double bond. Like I said, if I had an illustration, I could show you. But does that make sense? You know, there's
molecule. Why do they care about that? Like, what does it do? What does one do versus what does the other do?
Okay, what's interesting about it is where the and I'll get into THCP too, and that's another insidious form of it that they're making. Where that double bond is has to do affects its affinity for the receptors in your brain, and I know like people like to call them cannabinoid receptors. That infuriates me as well as a lot of other doctors. I don't know why they use that term. Because actually those receptors are specific for the anandamide neurochemical. But it just so happens that THC and, you know, its derivatives can also, I always think of THC sort of like a key that can basically connect to that receptor and basically turn a switch on and get people intoxicated. So that's another way to look at it. But, you know, Delta 8 reportedly is one third as strong as Delta 9 because of where that double bond is. But what they do is, and we'll get in, I don't mean to jump around, but they also sell THC Delta 8O, or they'll call it THCO, but a lot of times it's Delta 8. Now, when they use a chemical called acetic anhydride to acetylate it. Now, just kind of rewind, I know we've all heard the story about the Indians using tree bark for aspirin. Basically, that chemical from the tree bark is salicylic acid. Back in the late 1800s, Bayer Chemical, the Germans are brilliant chemists. They were the ones, I think, probably the foundation for chemistry that we have today. They acetylated salicylic acid and made aspirin, okay, make a little bit stronger. And then later somebody decides, I don't know if it was Bayer or not, but I know we know they have poppy seeds, they make poppy seeds and opium, and opium is converted to morphine. Well, then they decided to acetylate morphine, and guess what? That's where we get heroin. And heroin is about 3 times stronger than morphine. And the same thing with Delta 8. Regular Delta 8 is going to be 3 times stronger than regular, you know, Delta 8O, or the acetylated version, is going to be 3 times stronger. So once you get THC, Delta 8 THCO, then it's 3 times stronger than Delta 8. Well, guess what? Delta 8 is 1/3 as strong as Delta 9, but if you acetylate it, it basically, since it increases the potency by 3, then it equals or approximately equals, let's just say that for argument's sake, the same potency as Delta non-THC.
So I have a question. If you had just, you went out, grew some plants, harvested the buds, what is that? Is that 8 or 9 without having any acetylation?
Okay. Normally it's THCA, and then over time it can convert to just Delta 9 THC. Okay, but in the plant, Delta 8 occurs naturally, but it's only like at 0.1%. It's a very, very low amount. So to make it commercially viable, what they have to do is convert CBD, which they have an overabundance of from the hemp plant, into Delta 8. And they do that using a process. They use different acids, and the acids is a catalyst, and a catalyst basically facilitates a chemical reaction without being consumed. So keep that in mind. So they have different kind of acids they use. They have citric acid. I've seen toluenic acid. There's so many different things out there. I'm not sure what industry uses, but you know, you can do it in your house. They have all kind of instructions online how to do it.
Okay, so if you go down to your local shop and you buy bud, and it's they got different names, different varieties, and so forth.
Right.
Why is that so strong if it's Delta 8? I mean, they're not treating those buds with anything, are they?
Well, if it's natural, the Delta 8 is only 0.1. It's a small percentage. So those, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen it. Most of the products that I've seen that I've studied, you know, look at the COAs, it's Delta 8 that was synthetically produced, or the industry likes to argue semi-synthetically. It's a semi-synthetic, but at the end of the day, they have to use a chemical process to convert CBD into Delta 8 THC. And then, you know, they'll put that in vapes, but it's such a high, high concentration. That could be why. But if it's bud, technically, it's going to be mostly Delta non-THC or Delta non-THCA. But at the end of the day, there's very little Delta 8 THC in it.
Okay.
From what I've read, it's 0.1% or less. It's a very, very small, minute amount. Again, that's why they're, you know, when they first had the hemp bill, you know, it's supposed to be for rope, not dope. I've seen that saying. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So that was the intent, but that's not what happened. And, you know, they have this CBD pennies on the dollar, so they just use an organic solvent. And one of those is actually toluene, which is they use in paint products and other things. And some kind of acid. They do this exothermic reaction. It gives off heat. They've got to keep it cool or they'll blow themselves up, literally. And then they convert CBD into Delta 8. And it's just like a chemical plant. You know, it's next to a lot of refineries. You know, they make all these chemicals using a similar process. Not similar in a way of using catalysts and organic solvents, et cetera, heat, or got to remove the heat, depends on the process. There's different ways of making, you know, different chemical, you know, making one chemical and a different chemical. But they're just using that same process. I mean, when you think about this, if you can think about Lego blocks, chemistry is a lot like that. You can manipulate these Lego blocks into different structural configurations with the same number, same type, and come up with different, you know, molecules that act on the body in different ways.
So once you make the hemp available, there's the beginning of your Lego set.
Oh yeah, right. Because hemp is a high, you know, the hemp that they're growing, you know, it's supposed to be only 0.3% Delta 9 THC.
Oh, and it's being tested, THC. Right?
Well, that's a whole nother topic. I mean,
we'll just say no. Or we'll say not as much.
You know, the police have actually tested this stuff, and it didn't match the certificate of analysis. And they've busted several stores in Texas. Yeah, that's been in testimony after testimony that I've listened to from actually the the president of Chiefs of Police of Texas. He's an awesome guy, trying to make a difference, but for some reason it goes on deaf ears in the not all the legislators. The senators understand it. Some of the Republicans and Democrats in the House, but I don't know what happened with Governor Abbott.
Money.
But yeah, before we go down to the Texas thing, one other thing I want to add to is THCP. Okay. THCP. They sell out a lot. It's in a lot of vapes, some edibles. But this is a really insidious one. And a lot of people don't know this. But THCP was discovered, I don't know, a few years ago by this Italian group. And there's a paper on it if you do THCP. And what they found is it's over 30 times, again, 30, three times stronger than Delta non-THC, 30 times.
Wow.
And it doesn't, it occurs supposedly, reportedly in the plant, again, in I think even smaller amounts than Delta 8 THC. Okay. But, so, you know, it's not going to affect somebody, you know, as greatly as if you have a product that's, say, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 or higher percent, especially like vape THCP. Now, what they do is they can convert CBD into, you know, one form of THC and then do another chemical process to convert it over to THCP. So they're doing that also. And how that's legal, I have no idea. Supposedly their argument is because it occurs quote unquote naturally in a plant, even though it is small amount, that it's legal. And the same with Delta 8. The DEA has a letter out on this. Their idea is, you know, it's not legal. You know, it's not really quote unquote naturally occurring. There's an argument. It went to court. I don't know where it is because you know how things go when it goes to court, it gets drug out over the years. But just from a science/medical perspective, we know what Delta 9 THC does to people. Can you imagine something that's 32 times stronger? Imagine if you took Tylenol and you took something that was 32 times stronger. I mean, it's just unfathomable that that's even being allowed.
What we're finding on the enforcement side, Jesse, is even on the crappy hemp crops that come out, that they spray it with synthetic THC, and then they can then they have a high, very high potency product that's cheaper to produce than, you know, and it's on the legal side. Depending on your state, you can grow it. I also have another question for you, and it has to do with the toxicity, because we have taken loads here in California where we've had them tested and the pesticide contamination was deadly. And that same thing's going on with hemp, correct?
Yes, that and also, okay, so keep in mind, remember we talked earlier about converting CBD into Delta 8? They use an acid as a catalyst.
Yes.
A catalyst is not consumed in the chemical reaction. So what they have to do, you know, if you read up on this conversion process, and actually do this on some of the products that get out I guess what kind of helps is some of this petroleum background that I have, because they'll get refinery grade propylene and basically put it through an acid wash to get rid of the sulfur, but then they put it in and have to get rid of sulfur. I'm sorry. And then they'll have to neutralize that acid in that product. So they have to do the same thing here. They're using an acid to convert CBD into Delta 8 THC. Now, that acid doesn't get consumed or converted over to anything. It's a catalyst, so it's not consumed. It's still there. So they have to do, quote unquote, an acid wash to get, you know, the pH of this stuff to a reasonable level so it doesn't affect people. But are they actually doing that? And the other thing is, there's a really neat graphic Pro Verde Labs has online. One of the presentations I sent you guys, it's there, but I think there's like if you look at it closely, there's 13 references to these peaks on a spectrograph they did of unknown chemicals. And I actually talked to this guy, sent him an email, and kind of discussed in some of these finer points. And actually, there's a paper too. It's an article online about, the chemists being concerned about Delta 8. Because all of these residual chemicals that they don't even know what they are. That's kind of scary in itself. They have no idea what this particular chemical is on the spectrograph.
This is like a commercial for what could go wrong. We have to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Jesse LeBlanc, and along with all of the other things he's done, he is a science advisor for Every Brain Matters, and we have that tied up on the site for you, linked up to the site. Definitely want you to go look at this, because you cannot absorb any of this in one sitting. You're going to have to look at the rest of it. And as much as we've discussed it, I'm thinking, yeah, I need to listen to this show like 5 more times. Anyway, you can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. Songs written at a time when marijuana was 2% THC. Even the music sounded happier and less scary and demonic and chemical laced. Yes?
Jesse, I have a question for you. In my research on hemp products, I discovered that hemp is actually used in hazmat situations, Superfund sites, because it apparently cleans the soil. At least this is what the hemp industry is saying, and that it uptakes all the heavy metals and bad stuff that's in the soil. Is that true?
Yes. When I first got into this looking, that was one of the things that really blew me away that I sent out to the group that I normally, circle with friends. There's a really, call it bioremediation, and it absorbs toxins. I haven't validated this, but supposedly they planted hemp all around the Chernobyl
site. Yeah, did they do that?
That's what I read, but there's a CBS article. It's probably six years old, but you could do, I think, bioremediation using hemp, and it'll pop up all over the place. There's an interesting CBS article that I read, that's the one I sent out, where in Italy they had a...
Jesse, you were abducted by aliens there. Now we can hardly hear you. Something happened. He's far away from his phone.
It's on his end somewhere.
Yeah, Jesse, we can't hear you. Okay, so we can't hear him. We can hear him. He's very small in the background. Yeah, he's going to take care of it. So we, the four of us, have done a ton of programs on this in some form or fashion.
Right.
So really, it's like something for everyone, right?
Well, I find what Jesse sent, he sent, and I was reading over it, and when they hit this one lawsuit in Texas about the commissioner hiring this aide that took all these thousands and thousands of dollars to issue hemp licenses. And I think this industry is not any better than the pot industry.
Or the tobacco industry, or even the tobacco day.
Yeah. We are dealing with the same type of people. It's about the money, and who cares what you ingest into your body?
And sometimes it's just lack of information. I mean, people that are over a certain age think that this is still...
Well, somebody's daughter told them that this would be good for you.
Then there's that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people don't realize the chemical... They really don't. I mean, they think that people are still growing just regular pot and, you know, smoking it like they did back in the 60s.
And I'm growing hemp to make thread,
and
to
then
make
there's
clothes,
that.
You know? Like, I need paper, and I can grow my own paper.
Yeah. And... That I don't think a lot of people, when you look at a lot of who is making laws and rules and policy, they're from the era of 2% THC back in the 60s, and they have not kept up. Well, I mean, because why?
Yeah.
Honestly, in real life, most people are not reading a whole lot about this. They're not doing a bunch of stuff about this. But tell you what, we started doing this. I just was looking at our archive. First one we did was with the pharmacist, Phil Drum. Back in July of 2017. And even though we've done a ton of shows since then, he's talking about things today. I'm like, that's new for me. Like, that's a slightly different twist.
And I would want to remind everybody, your audience, that if you've been injured in any way by marijuana or hemp, you should reach out and contact Dave Evans from CIVL, the Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. And he's an attorney out of New Jersey, and they are bringing successful lawsuits against the industry across the United States. So if you've been injured, just Google CIVL, C-I-V-E-L.
We'll put it on for today.
Okay.
So they can just go on there and click on it. C-I-V-L, yes?
E-L.
Oh, C-I-V-E-L.
I'll send you the link.
I always get it wrong. Okay, we found Jay again. He got slurped up into the cone of silence, and he's now been...
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
The miracle of modern technology is not always miraculous, as we've learned. And the miracle of live radio is even less miraculous sometimes. We'll live. All right.
So yeah, I just want to concur. There is a lot of similarities between this industry and the tobacco industry.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
And the money. The money. And they don't care.
The money and the dumbness. If you're if you weren't a cigarette smoker, even in that in that fight, right?
Any money linked to your governor?
Jesse, any money linked to your governor on this? I know he's very conservative, but it's...
You know, it's funny you ask that, because, you know, I did a open records request with the governor's office to find out when he met with hemp industry representatives. And I got an email back a couple weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. And if you juxtapose him meeting with them Thursday, July 31st, 2025, you know, he met with one group, and I'm talking about a group at 10 a.m. He met with somebody from Bluebonnet Labs. And I want you to note some of these names. This to me is a warning flag. Gruntstahl LLC, Jeremy Green's Farm, Strategic Advisor Scott & Scott, Hemp Industry Farmers of America. Okay, and then at 10:45, he met with another group, co-founder and CEO of Mood. They sell, I think, THC-infused drinks, which is illegal per the FDA Food and Drug Act. Aim High Hemp Distribution. That's a fitting name. CBD Pros. That's another CBD Pro, another strategic advisor, and in this other company Nowadays. If somebody came to visit me and their company name was quote unquote Mood, I would, you know, I'd have some red flags go off. But he was able to meet with all of these people. But what's interesting is I know personally, you know, I mean, y'all know Aubrey Adams, Every Brain Matters. She and a host of parents tried to meet with the governor, along with trying to get a face-to-face with him. Medical groups. I mean, there's several medical groups in Texas that sent a letter out, you know, supporting Senate Bill 3, basically banning all THC. He wouldn't meet with any of these people. But he found Tom to meet with the hemp industry, and that really soured a lot of people, especially Republican, conservative people, their viewpoint on Governor Abbott. I used to really respect him. I have a hard time respecting him now. I mean, if he would have at least gave equal opportunity to impacted parents, you know, I praise God that my kids are fine. They didn't fool with this stuff. But, you know, talking to so many parents and listening to their story, it's heartbreaking that, for me, that the governor didn't take Tom out. I mean, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, to me, he should be governor of the state as well as maybe the president. I think he would get a lot done and straighten this country out. He's an awesome man. And the same as Senator Perry, who's been pushing this through. But I just don't know where he's coming from. I mean, if you look at the evidence, it's so clear that he's being influenced by the industry. And I kind of want to circle back to the wording of the 2018 Farm Bill. You see why the wording and some of the language they use is so insidious? Because you wonder, was this accidentally done or purposely done to allow these quote-unquote loopholes? And in a way, he's doing the same thing in Texas as the you know, the senators and representatives who voted for the 2018 Farm Bill did. I mean, it's sort of a sad fact for Texas that we were in this current state, because I didn't think this would happen, especially in light of the fact, and this is on video, you know, basically Dan Patrick said that, and he told us this in a face-to-face meeting, too, that I sat in, that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick gave him his word that he would sign SB3. And it wasn't until, I think, almost midnight he had till June 22nd, 2025 to sign it. And he waited till, I think, 11:45 before he vetoed it. So I don't know what got to him or what changed his mind, but he told at least Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick that he was going to sign SB3.
It's not just
and we Texas. Were happy about it.
It's not just Texas, Jesse. We've had local politicians, our city politicians, take a lot of money from the cannabis industry, and all of a sudden things seem to happen where, you know, I mean, it's quid pro quo. It's pay to play. There's no doubt about it. I had a statistic from Oklahoma that just came out in the subcommittee meeting, and that the budget for Oklahoma is something like $13 billion a year. And the marijuana and hemp industry money was $130 billion a year, mostly going to Chinese operatives. So when you have that kind of money, it's just so corrupts so many politicians. They claim to be conservative, and then they take all this money through the back door, and it is ruining our country and our governments.
Yeah, being you brought up the Chinese, and I'm not being racist because I love the Chinese. You know, we were their allies during World War II. But what concerns me is that if, you know, and I challenge everybody to spend a few minutes, maybe 30 minutes, reading up on the mid-1800s, the opium wars between China and Britain and kind of the West. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basically the British flooded the Chinese drug market with cheap opium from India. And they went to a couple wars, I think two wars. That's how Britain got Hong Kong, was because of one of the opium wars. There was two of them. But basically the Chinese are using the same book that the British did, because it, you know, that whole opium issue in China in the mid-1800s set that country back a whole century at least. That's what a lot of historians say. And I think they're using that same exact playbook on America in the West. I know that sounds kind of conspiratorial, but it's not meant to be. Just read history. There's so much we can learn from history that we're ignoring. And that's one of those lessons from history that we need to take heed, especially our politicians who have you know, the purse strings for enforcement. But I think, Joe, you'll agree that part of the problem is not so much we don't have laws on the books already. It's a lack of enforcement.
Well, we have a county just north of us who can't enforce because currently the ACLU is representing the cartel growers against the county who's trying to enforce the law and ordinances that would curtail their illegal activities. And who would have thought, well, I guess now it's not really all that shocking, but the ACLU is representing criminals and successfully representing criminals.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there was a Food and Drug Act wording that clearly shows that adding any cannabinoids to food, drinks, or beverages is illegal. But, you know, one of the things, at least we heard through the grapevine, that Governor Abbott's pushing, at least he wants to get going, is these THC-infused drinks. And I don't know if you want to go down that rabbit hole.
We can. And we've got to blow out for the news here because it's going to cut us off whenever Alex gives me the high sign here. High sign. Our guest is Jesse LeBlanc, and we will be right back after the news. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We bookended that, and we bought time. We're time traveling today. God, you gotta love it. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. It is Sunday, September 21st, and my name is still Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Still Bill Cundiff?
Still Bill Cundiff.
Still today.
And I'm still Kathy.
Officer Joe is engrossed in something on his computer. But, okay, to do my top of the hour commercial, no, on Prop 50. If you do not know what Prop 50 is, I'm not going to go into it. No, I am. They're redistricting the state of California and basically wiping out seats.
I like how you say they.
They, them. Well, we have an independent redistricting commission that we voted in that is part of our state constitution.
And they're bypassing that.
And yes, the state legislature.
Thumbing their nose at the law.
Yep, they decided we're going to try to get the public to violate the state constitution and skip over it for the next three elections. So it would be 2026, 28, and 30. And then supposedly the Citizens Redistricting Commission will come back. The odd part is this is all being done because of President Trump, who has nothing to do with this, and Texas, which also has nothing to do with it, mm-mm, because the Texas legislature was sued and had to redraw their lines, and it has nothing to do with President Trump. So if you've been told that, do more homework. And if you would like to do more homework, you can find it at ShastaGOP.com. If you live outside of Shasta County, go there anyway. You can get to the California GOP from there. And at ShastaGOP.com, you will see locations for signs. You will see flyers you can print, stuff you can post online, and information so that you can be smart. Because your ballot's going to show up in about less than a month, like 3 weeks. So you'll see it the first part of October. Yeah, because today is the 21st of September, 2025. So sorry if we air this in a different, after the election, you'll just have to, you know, get over it. So our guest today is Jay LeBlanc. We keep calling him Jesse because that's his real name, but he ditched the other letters and just went with the first one and just goes by Jay, which I'm good with. Having a short name myself, I just use the one I have. But I wanted to go back on today's program. Darn it, I changed the page. But he is an advisor for Every Brain Matters, which is an amazing organization, and there is a just a wealth of knowledge there. On the page for today's show, we have linked a ton of information from him. We will never be able to cover it all. And so that's why we post a page for every show. It is free to listen, commercial free also, so save you a little bit of time if you listen in the archive. And we don't care what you do with it. We don't have a copyright. So if you want to make a copy, send it to your friends, post it somewhere. We're not going to come after you and tell you you owe us money. You don't owe us money. We do this as a public service.
Tell 10 friends to tell 10 friends.
There you go. All right. So, sorry, Jay. We cut you off at the end of the top of the hour there. It's one of those things we have no flex with. Go back to where you were, if you can time travel that direction for us.
No, yeah, I'm glad we did, because this is something that people need to be aware of, and it just shows how insidious this industry is. I mean, it's so much like the tobacco industry, as we alluded to before. So THC, CBD, all of these cannabinoids, they're basically what you call lipids. You know, it's a plant oil, okay? Does that make sense?
Okay.
You know, just say like sesame seed oil, olive oil, something along those lines. It may be the viscosity or thickness may be a little bit more, but it's basically a plant-derived oil. That's why it readily absorbs into fat-containing organs, you know, your brain, or lipid-containing organs like your brain, liver, et cetera, and why a blood test, which is water-based, doesn't really tell a whole lot. But what they're doing is, we all know the proverbial saying, oil and water don't mix, right?
Yeah.
So how do you mix THC in a liquid or water-based beverage? Well, they use an emulsifier, but it gets better than that. What they do is they nano-emulsify the THC or CBD molecules, mostly THC, I would probably say at this point, into very, very small, minute elements so that it readily mixes in water. And what it does, it increases the bioavailability of that product. You know, when it goes, you know how you'll hear these stories, oh, I took an edible and it didn't kick in an hour, hour and a half or so. So I took another one, and then they wound up getting OD on THC. Well, and some of the people advertise, you know, these drinks, or they also put it in edibles. They nano emulsify it, and they put it in, they encapsulate it too. But, you know, some people are advertising it kicks in 15 minutes. Some of the drinks kick in 30 minutes or less. That's what's being quote unquote advertised. And using this nano emulsification that they use to, you know, allow it to mix, you know, into a liquid or water-based drink. So, you know, they're able to have it where you don't have to shake it, so it stays in suspension, the THC. But also, as a byproduct, it kicks in that much quicker. So to me, that's telling me that it could even be more addictive. And what's interesting is, you know, there's this website, Cannabis Science Tech, and they call it cannabinoid delivery system. In fact, the title of the article is Small Wonders, Nanoemulsification Technology for Cannabinoid Delivery. Well, are you all familiar with Jeffrey Wigand and the 60-minute interview back in 1994? Probably not. I did some studying. But have you ever watched the movie The Insider, which is worth watching with Russell Crowe? It's sort of a dramatized version of basically the inside of the tobacco whistleblower.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So this is an excerpt that I have in a paper that I wrote. This is an excerpt from 2/4/1996, a 60-minute interview between Mike Wallace and Jeffrey Wigand. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But, this, you know, Wigand makes a statement. He said, they're in the nicotine delivery business. And then Mike Wallace asks a question, and that's what cigarettes are for. And Wigand says, most certainly, it's a delivery device for nicotine. And I want to say, that's the first time I've ever heard, and this is in the movie, too. They bring this out in the movie. I mean, they do a really good job. I mean, it's dramatized, yes. But if you read the actual interview and you look at the job that Russell Crowe does, he picks up a lot of Jeffrey's mannerisms, and the statements are almost verbatim from the actual interview. It's worth watching because you can see the parallels so clear. But it's funny that the hemp industry, or cannabinoid industry, I should say, cover all of it, hemp and marijuana, that, you know, small wonder, nano-emulsification technology for cannabinoid delivery. So they're in the same business, but it's just an example of what they're doing to manipulate, just like THCP. They're manipulating these base molecules with, you know, synthetic chemical processes to make them even more powerful, more addictive, stronger. And the same thing here. You know, your edibles and these THC-infused drinks, which I think is going to be the downfall of so many people, you know, they're making them, instead of taking an hour and a half to kick in, they're going to be kicking in 10, 15, 20 minutes, somewhere up in there, very, very quickly. And one of the, you know, one of the anecdotes during the testimony, which is available online, when Dan Patrick had one of his first press conferences, they had a police officer, a sheriff from, I think, the Dallas area, and he made the statement, and I believe him, that he knows of a restaurant that had to stop serving, and these were legal in Texas because it, you know, it meets the hemp criteria of 0.3% or less THC, but they had to stop serving them because they would give a customer one drink, and these people went a little, I wouldn't say wonky, but they were definitely intoxicated, so they stopped serving them because of the liability involved. And that kind of like, whoa. So you can see how that's an issue, especially if they're using this nano-emulsification technology to make it, you know, to basically, quote-unquote, kick in quicker. And again, this applies to edibles, too. They're using the same technology on edibles, which I never knew until maybe about a month ago when I did some more research.
And I think it's important to state, Jesse, that none of this is evaluated by the FDA, and none of this could pass any FDA legitimate testing. And individuals who use them may believe they don't have any psychoactive properties because they're labeled as a hemp product, but there's a lot of concerns around the formulations, the purity and the dosage, and the unintended product exposure to children and pets, and the adverse effects, which are what you just stated, vomiting, hallucinations, and loss of consciousness. So this stuff can kill you in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of sad, and what's really sad is this. I know a parent really, really well, and her loved one who happened to use and got addicted, but, you know, he's in recovery and he's doing fine now. But one of the first things he said, he was in a young adult, over 21, but what's interesting, he says, he's a rule follower, is that he said he wouldn't have tried it if it wasn't legal.
Ooh.
So, you know, when Abbott or whoever, you know, like, you know, all these senators, representatives who passed the 2018 Farm Bill, and especially in light of, and even in 2019 in Texas, they passed a similar bill that kind of facilitated all of this. I mean, there's a lot of culpability to go around because they basically said this is a legal substance, and it's quote-unquote, I wouldn't say they said this verbatim, but they were inferring that it's safe, and it's not. And that's really, really troubling. And if I can, just give me, could I have a minute to read this quote from a FDA warning letter? This is verbatim from this warning letter. If you could go online, you can just type in FDA warning letter, warning letters, you'll get a page pop up, and then right at the top, there's a lot of information you think you need to fill in, but you don't need to. Up at the top, you can type in CBD, THC. The easiest thing is to type in CBD. And if you go back to 2024, one of the warning letters states this, and they state this in other ones too. And this is quote-unquote from the FDA. We note that your firm sells food products, and from an FDA perspective, food includes drink and beverages. And I looked up the difference between drink and beverage. A drink you drink or gulp, and in a beverage is you sip. There's a subtle difference. But bottom line, I know it's ridiculous. It's a play on words. But anyway, food products includes all of this that contain cannabinoids other than Delta-8 THC. This letter was specific to Delta-8, but they're saying any cannabinoid. We know of no basis to conclude that any use in food of a cannabinoid, plant-derived or otherwise, would be safe and lawful. For certain cannabinoids, such as Delta-8 THC, the available data raises serious concerns about potential harm. For other cannabinoids, there is little or no available information concerning the safety of their use in food. No cannabinoid, plant-derived or otherwise, and I'm sure they were referring to the semi-synthetic or synthetic, however you want to term it, is approved for use in any food as an additive. Moreover, we know of no basis to conclude that any intended use in food of any cannabinoid satisfies that criteria for GRAS, which is generally recognized as safe status. So they're basically breaking the Food and Drug, and that's where I alluded earlier. It's like there's laws in place, but why is there this lack of will? I mean, is this industry this powerful that we just let them go? Doesn't matter, but God forbid if we don't pay our taxes or not pay a speeding ticket. I mean, you know what I'm saying? There's this double standard about following the law that's not applied to the quote-unquote cannabis industry. And I use that term. I include hemp and marijuana.
Jesse, more than 11% of U.S. 12th graders used psychoactive Delta 8 THC last year, and that was by the Keck School of Medicine from USC, and the doctor involved in that was Laura LeBlanc. She's no relative of yours, is she?
No, but we're kindred spirits, I'm sure. you never know. I mean, I've got a family tree that my cousin gave me. It goes back from 1643 from France to Nova Scotia. We got exiled from Nova Scotia because the Acadians wouldn't pledge allegiance to the Queen, and then wound up in Louisiana and elsewhere. So I don't. Who knows?
And now you have a Texas drawl.
Yeah,
it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, I didn't mean to digress, but
no, it's okay. We have time to digress. That's why we do a long form show.
So my question too is, because I work with youth primarily, is what I see is we have just normalized all of this.
Yeah.
It's like when you say, do your research, we can't get parents to neither come out to any forum that we do, nor will they do any research. So sadly, the only education the kids get is what we deliver in the schools. And sometimes that is not... parents are not happy about that because they are probably part of the problem as far as growing illegally and using it illegally. How do we deliver this information in a positive light that people will start paying attention?
Did you want me to comment?
Yeah. I mean, how do we get people to see this?
Well, I don't mean to go down the religious rabbit hole, but it applies whether we like it or not. And if we don't want to go down this road, I don't have to. But, you know, after looking at this whole problem with marijuana, THC, now hemp, for almost 10 years, and thinking, you know, like, I grew up in an industry where science dictated decisions. And when I say science, also, you know, looking at the risk, because I was a certified risk assessment practitioner, and also I had to do hazardous operation reviews. You know, whenever you change a product, I don't mean to get in the oil industry, but all of this stuff applies. At the end of the day, industry in general, you have to have some basis, some physical laws you go by. You know, whatever you want to call it. And there's certain things you just don't do there's certain things you have to do to ensure safety, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And for some reason, we're just missing that science, logic, rational thought. It's almost like people are just blinded by, I don't know what, but to me, at the end of the day, it's a spiritual problem. Because what I hear over and over, and I'll leave it at this, and I'll get off my soapbox about preaching, but I hear it over and over. And in fact, one of the attorneys in a testimony that was given recently in Texas said, this is about personal freedom. I'm going to paraphrase it. This is about personal freedom and not about safety. He said that. That's what he was inferring. And I hear it over and over. Oh, it's my right. It's my personal freedom. Well, it's not if it impacts other people. And this drug impacts, there's a lot of collateral damage when one person uses this drug. I've seen it destroy families. I mean, families are spending close to $300,000 for, I don't know, less than a year of rehab recovery. I mean, I've heard story after story. Some parents can't even afford it, and instead of enjoying their retirement, they're having to care for a 30-something-year-old young adult who's just totally out of it. I mean, still, even though they're not using it, it's really sad. But we just need to realize that there's no such thing as absolute freedom. And just like I can't go on the top of my roof and decide I'm free to do whatever I want, I'm going to jump off. Well, if I jump off, I could probably wind up with two broken legs and maybe even die. Well, when you jump off the roof of, you know, THC use, it's going to catch up with you sooner or later. And people need to realize that, you know, there is a higher power. There are right and wrong. And I don't care what religion you are, being sober-minded and having rational thought is one of those rules that, you know, God put in place. And people aren't following that. I think that's part of the problem. People need to realize that there is a higher power. There are absolutes. There are rules you need to live by. Otherwise, you're going to have what we have today, total chaos.
And there are evil people out there that are using the human condition, and they're putting powdered glass and grit, sugar water and adhesives, synthetic terpenes and synthetic cannabinoids into their products that people are consuming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, boys and girls, we have to take a really swift break. And I'm going to go out with a little Neil Diamond tune. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'd like to deny the fact that pot was the beginning of my usage of drugs. I mean, it's there as a fact. It was the beginning of my using of drugs. It was the first thing I touched in the drug field. I was told it was innocent by everybody that surrounded me, people that I looked up to as intellectuals and smart people. And they told me there was nothing wrong with pot. You would never graduate from anything else. Now I can walk up the street here about a block and see these same people, as intellectual as I thought they were, using heroin. I can't see myself ever using it again.
La la la, pot, pot, give me some pot. Forget what you are, you can be what you're not. Hip, hip, you wanna be hip. You know it all if you don't take a trip. Pot, pot.
Accidentally smoked pesticides or PCP the year before I left for college. Everything looked like a deep fried meme. I think somebody laced my weed. I didn't do it to myself, I promise. My mama warned me about little pills and older men's strawberry fields that never end. She did her time. Somehow escaped that clawing hand, a strength I'll never understand. That iron grip can get so tight. What if I broke?
Yes, what could possibly be in it that would be bad? Bill was getting a lesson during the commercial about why they would put glass in it.
Or iron grit is, it's all about monetary, you know, make the weed heavier and you can sell it for more money. Don't have to put as much weed in the bag when you got other stuff, adulterants in there.
That's incredible.
You know, related to this, can we go down one rabbit hole?
It might take
3 minutes.
We have a half hour and some change.
You know, we focus on, you know, the harms of THC. When I use that, it includes any of the variants, derivatives. You know, related to psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, CHS, et cetera, et cetera. But there's one thing that I found fascinating, is in this is available online if you do German study on antisocial personality disorder and cannabis. Okay, you know, something you can find it readily. But there's a 2008 German study. It showed they had 99, and this is just sort of a correlation, but as I think Joe can testify to this, but and it alludes to them putting glass filings and metal in this stuff. But okay, so it showed that they had 99 cannabis users involved in this study. Guess what percentage of them exhibited antisocial personality disorder? And I'm going to define that after y'all try to guess. Give me a couple guesses on what percent exhibited that personality disorder.
98.
Out of 99. 90%. Close.
98%.
Okay. Yeah, 90%. Well, I think you're right in a way, but I'll leave it at that. So what is antisocial personality disorder? So I'm going to just read real quick. It's also known as sopography, but involves a persistent pattern of callousness towards others and a disregard for social norms and laws. Depending on the severity, they may have difficulty exhibiting empathy or caring for others. A weak conscience or moral compass allows them to deceive and manipulate those around them. They can also be hostile and impulsive, and they may not feel remorse for their actions. They're prone to self-destructive acts and may experience frequent legal troubles. This is a paraphrase from and Mayo Clinic has a similar definitions about what antisocial personality disorder. And I want to say, you ask yourself, yeah, it's a correlation. Correlation doesn't mean causation. But I see this over and over, especially listening to parents' behaviors, et cetera. And then you see it in some of the mass shootings we've had recently,
yep.
Or shootings. You know, these people, the Minnesota shooter, he worked at a medical cannabis facility. And you just wonder, is this more of a correlation? Is this more of a causation rather than correlation? Because, this is like dead on. Yeah, it may not kill them, but it does affect their, outlook on them, on life, and especially their fellow human beings. Because, what I've found is, they have a total disregard for law. They have false memories. And what amazes me, and it gets the parents so infuriated in these testimonies, one of the vocal opponents of SB3, he would say that these hemp-derived products are not synthetic. And it's like, wait. And nobody would challenge him. And, you want to get up there and say, that's not true, but you can't. But you've got to stomach through that, and nobody challenges them. So he gets that false statement out there that these hemp products are not synthetic. They're all natural. And that's not true. And if you look at the certificates of analysis of the products he sells, got Delta 8 in it, et cetera, et cetera. Delta 8, yeah, it may occur naturally in a plant, but the Delta 8 they're using in their products, they've got to manufacture that. And if you've got to manufacture it using an acid, an organic solvent, that's not natural. It's synthetic, and then they try to make the argument, well, it's semi-synthetic, whatever you want to do.
Because solvents belong
in
the garage,
natural.
Not the kitchen.
Exactly.
No one has solvents in their kitchen unless it's under the sink.
It's unbelievable. But this is another thing we need to be concerned about, because something like this could disrupt. Oh, you kind of see it. I'm sure you see it in California. Total disregard for the law. No moral compass. And why is it tied to this drug culture? It's telling us something that we're deciding to ignore.
Well, for people who
society.
Yeah, and so for people that are thinking, well, I don't know. I read about a few of them who were involved with this. We have a whole list on the website: shooters, terrorists, and mass killers who use marijuana, and the list goes way back. This isn't just happening in the last few months. This is, let me be factual here since you're an engineer and stuff. 1978. The son of Jim Jones, who led 400 to suicide at Jonestown in Guyana, confirmed that Jones used LSD and marijuana. So,
well,
there you go.
I'll go further back than that.
Okay.
1973, Mark Essex, New Orleans. I dug up the police report, not I, but I had to contact the New Orleans archives in volume 2 to use the search term marijuana because it's in PDF form, thank God. It comes up several times and they found it on his person.
Oh, would you send me that and I'll post it?
Sure.
Yeah. Email it to me and I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, I put together something for Dr. Finn and others. Actually, I sent it to Alex Berenson too. But, I'll forward you the email I sent to Alex Berenson because it goes into a lot of detail. I had to put it on Google Drive because it's a very large file, and I'll just give you access to it.
Okay, thanks.
And then you can download it. It's too large. The file is too large to email.
No worries.
And it's volumes 1 and 2. Volume 1 gets into the nitty-gritty of it, and it actually happened over several days. And it was this heroic Marine Corps helicopter pilot who basically, I guess, gently borrowed one from the U.S. Marine Corps and basically allowed some police snipers get into it, and I remember watching it because it was 1973. I was a young 20-year-old, and I remember it was in the winter, and I remember watching it real time on TV. It was just crazy, but it's just recently that I kind of started doing some digging, and it's like, I wonder if Pot was involved in this, mm-hmm. was this guy a user, and he was. Along with the people he identified with, and it was sort of a radical group that he got radicalized. And once you juxtapose that with, these recent shooters, it's like, whoa, we're missing something here. We need to look at this deeper before we start legalizing it left and right.
Jesse, as you're aware, we're tracking the last 100, I'm going to call them famous, but active shooters in the U.S. that have murdered people. And there is a common thread, and it is marijuana being used by all mm-hmm. of them. The problem for us is to be able to get the toxicology results, and the coroners are not testing for the toxicology, the amount of THC or whatever other product is in the system of the shooter. So that's one of the things that we've been demanding. And Dr. Ronit Lev, who's now at the Office of National Drug Control Policy, has just taken that report. So if you have any additional information, I know you're in the list of emails that go around, please send just a very short excerpt of anybody that's involved in those kind of things, because we're trying to take it in front of Congress and actually do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, this 1973 Mark Essex case is classic, and he killed people over several days. I forgot the number, but it's a pretty high number. So it's just like, it's not the bare minimum. What is it, 3 or 4 people, and it's called a quote-unquote mass murder? No. I mean, it's horrendous what he did.
And that story is online if anybody wants to see it, about the Marine Corps colonel Army colonel that took the Marine Corps helicopter. It's a pretty incredible video.
No, he was a Marine colonel. Actually, my brother was in the Marines. He flew the same kind of helicopter, a CH-46. And he actually met the guy, I think, when he was in flight school in Pensacola. But, no, he was a Marine.
Marine, okay, I stand corrected.
He needs to be recognized more so than he was. And, in fact, he almost got court-martialed. I think the mayor had to step in and giving him some special dispensation because they tried to accuse him of stealing a U.S. government helicopter. It's amazing. It would make an awesome movie, a really awesome movie.
I'm going to be very interested to see if we can find out, was there any toxicology done on Charlie Kirk's shooter?
Okay, yeah. I thought you were going to ask Mark Essex. I tried to get the toxicology. All of that stuff was destroyed in Hurricane Katrina in a flood. Mm. So all that's available is, you can infer. I mean, no, there's no toxicology, but you can infer what's in Volume 2 that he smoked weed because of where they found it in his car. I think I don't know if his house, but definitely his car. They had, matchbox. They found an unburnt, you know, a partially burned in the ashtray, et cetera, et cetera. So it clearly shows that he was using. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, the Charlie Kirk, I'm almost like 99% positive somewhere along the way some drug or drugs were involved.
Yeah, it seems unlikely that it would dodge that one. There have been so many, just so many links. So that kind of go back on the hemp side of it, since we don't have another break until the top of the hour, we get to just keep talking. bonus. Anyway, I just, for people who think, well, hemp is in the Constitution and the Constitution was written on hemp and hemp is just for fabric and paper and stuff like that. You just hear this all the time. That's always the big pushback.
That's their argument. They don't have anything else to argue.
Yeah. So opening the door to this, how quick is the conversion? Okay, so you allow legalized growing of hemp. How quick does that become something that you find on a shelf filled with nail polish remover? That's what I always think of when you say these chemicals. How tough is that? How difficult? Broke the
show. You want me to answer?
Yeah.
That?
I'm like, I broke the show.
Well, I mean, kind of rephrase your question. I was trying to follow where you were going.
Well, like, yeah, you know, because this comes up all the time, right?
From seed to product.
Right.
Oh, yeah, seed to product. Seed to sale, right? We're going
to
follow
seed
it.
Seed to sale.
And it's just hemp. What is everybody so excited about?
Oh, yeah. I
how tough is it to get from just hemp, right? So you've legalized just hemp so they can make clothes and paper and other cheerful things out of, and then how much effort does it take to convert that into a saleable drug product?
Well, I mean, that was my whole, what we started off with was the basic wording from the 2018 Farm Bill. These chemical processes, you get a PhD chemist, and they have, if you look online, they have all of these autoclaves, et cetera, that they use to do this conversion process. It's not that difficult. It's definitely commercially viable. But I guess what...
So basically
it's all about the wording. Go ahead.
We could go on YouTube and learn how to do it.
You can. Unfortunately, a lot of this you can't. You can go on YouTube or you can look online and they ask, you know, you can, like Joe was saying, we could do it in our garage if you really wanted to. But, I mean, they have some sophisticated machinery, I guess you could say, you can buy online. You can see it. I wouldn't say you can buy it online, but there's companies that advertise, you know, like emulsification processes. A lot of these guys hire PhD chemists to do this. I mean, a lot of them have that on their staff to, you know, to manipulate these chemicals. And it's like they take pride in, okay, how many different variants can we do? Like I said, the latest is hydrogenated THC, HHC, and they also acetylate that. They have HHCO, and they do that because, you know how plant oils, they do go rancid. They add some extra hydrogen to it, and it gets hydrogenated and increases the shelf life. So it'll last longer. That's one of the reasons they do that. And the other funny thing about that is they have to use what they call a noble metal as a catalyst. Again, a catalyst is a consume. So these noble metals, what it is, they don't give up electrons. A lot of them they use in catalytic converters like palladium. But that's one of the metals they use. So I've noticed on certificates of analysis, they don't check for any of these metals, and you can get toxicity from these quote-unquote noble metals. They're called noble because they're under where they are on a periodic chart, and also they don't, I guess you could say, corrode or rust, you know, in layman's term. They don't give up any of the electrons. Sort of like, they don't use gold, but it's sort of like gold, you know, it doesn't tarnish like other metals do. Nickel's another one they use, although it does tarnish, but you can get heavy metal poisoning, or metal poisoning, I shouldn't say heavy metal, from a lot of the noble metals, but they have to use that as a catalyst to convert THC into this HHC or hydrogenated THC.
Jesse, I read that there's now dozens of variants. I mean, they're coming out with new
ones
every month.
It's hard to keep track, I'm going to be honest with you. Phil Drum sent me something recently, and it just kind of blew me away. And I even did one presentation. I said, this is not an exhaustive list, because they're constantly coming up with new items. I mean, one of the, I think Dr. Madreas with Harvard, she made this comment once about these PhD chemists. For them, it's sort of like a game, you know, sort of like, oh, I can do a Rubik's Cube in 10 seconds. You know, they find this as a challenge, and, you know, they're always looking for new chemicals that they can make that, you know, for these companies that they work for to, you know, get people intoxicated. That's all I can say. It's sort of a game, you know, when you get to that point. It's like, okay, let's see what we can do here.
I mean, the science is kind of complicated. These guys doing this, there's a ton of money in it, and so it's worth finding some smart... you know, some smart chemists to come up with this stuff. But if your base product is, you know, fields and fields and fields of hemp, and you can move it around legally, sure makes it easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically organic chemistry at the end of the day. You know, they have inorganic chemistry, which is like your petroleum. I'm sorry, not petroleum, but I don't want to get off on a tangent between... inorganic and organic, but it's all organic chemistry. I was wrong about the petroleum, but it's all organic chemistry. And I mean, organic chemistry is somewhat complicated. I know the basics of it. I've had a lot of inorganic chemistry, but the organic chemistry, you know, it's pretty challenging to understand it. I almost took a course just to know, but I was able to get a study course my son had, because he's a nurse, and I kind of read through that and kind of got the gist of it all. But again, the way to look at it is, I'm giving you a set of Lego blocks, different colors, and you can manipulate that into all kinds of things. And basically through using catalysts and acids and heat or cold or whatever, you can, through some chemical process, you can, instead of using your hands with Lego blocks, they're using these chemicals to manipulate the structure of the molecule.
And Jesse, they're not restricted from the banking industry, because it's a farm product, and so they're using all the money systems to be able to benefit themselves, unlike the cannabis industry, which has to fight for banking. So it's no wonder that hemp is just going to take off as far as an intoxicant, until they put controls on it. And I don't see the government putting the controls on it that are necessary, and why your governor went down and allowed it in your state. And it's going to be the ruination of our country. There's no doubt in my mind.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah, I always tell people about the form bill wording, how insidious it is, and a lot of times I get a blank stare even when I read it to them. But I think after this, you know, hour and a half that we talked, you can, if you go back to it and you see any derivative, extract, isomer, you can see how that language allowed these quote unquote loopholes. It's like, was this purposeful? I have a hard time believing it wasn't. And I have a hard time believing that Mitch McConnell and whoever else, quote unquote, drafted it, actually drafted it. It had to be somebody with a chemical background. Oh yeah, an acid, you know, because of THCA loophole. You see where, I mean, maybe it's me, I don't know, but do y'all maybe have a better understanding now after we went through, I mean, we kind of did a deep dive, fairly good deep dive, but you see how the wording in that farm bill.
Yeah. And it was smart. Put it in the farm bill, because the farm bill is massive. It has to pass. And that's a blip on the radar in a farm bill. I mean.
Yeah. And you know what else? The last point I want to make, too, is what's really amazing is you go back to tobacco, big tobacco, and Jeffrey Wigand. He worked for a company that was in Kentucky, and his testimony just decimated the tobacco industry in Kentucky. And guess who comes up with the hemp bill? Mitch McConnell, who represents a senator, Kentucky. Okay? And then Paul Rand, if I'm not mistaken, he's also tied to Kentucky, and he's the one who kind of shot, remember the latest round of bills to basically close all these loopholes? I mean, what is it with Kentucky and these, I would, you know,
well, unless that's their crop. I mean,
yeah, I know, but I mean, it's just interesting.
That's where tobacco comes from.
That connection, it goes from tobacco to hemp, which is even to me, it's one thing to get cancer and have your lungs go out when you're maybe 60, 70 years old. I mean, I lost my grandparents to tobacco, but it's a whole nother thing when you're in your, a teen, early adult, where, I mean, I just heard a story today from a good friend. This young lady never did gummies before, took 3 gummies. I don't know how strong they were. And now she's got permanent schizophrenia. And she, you know, her degree that she had, she can't even work. Basically, her parents are having to take care of her like you would for an elderly parent. But, you know, she's probably in her 20s or 30s now. I mean, what is it? That's how dangerous this stuff is. It's worse than tobacco.
Jesse, yeah. I'm working a case in Southern California right now of a beauty queen who got a gummy, did not use THC products, got a gummy from her boyfriend, which was stolen from the nurse mother, and ate the gummy, and 30 minutes later stood atop a bridge in Southern California and jumped off and was run over 7 times. Did the marijuana killer or the THC killer, or did the getting run over 7 times killer? And so there's a lawsuit going on in that case right now, and actually a homicide investigation, which is just closed out. So it's a dangerous product. I don't care who tells you, what industry person tells you it's safe, it's natural. It's all a lie. And people should. And we're waiting for the lawsuits, successful lawsuits against the cannabis industry, because once that really starts to take off and the lawyers get hungry, then maybe we'll see some controls put on the industry, and that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, but it's a shame we can't look at science and use the existing laws we have now to put this industry, you know, to put a stop to this. Again, I don't mean to backtrack, but, you know, I read you the FDA warning letter, mm-hmm. what it says.
Right.
I mean, even if we could get it out of edibles and drinks and that, I mean, that would be a major hurdle to cross. I mean, it's there. The laws are there. Why isn't anybody doing it?
It's the enforcement.
That's the biggest question and troubling issue that I see, is why is there this malaise or general lack of enforcement? I don't know. I mean, yeah, y'all are doing a great job out there, Joe, enforcing the law, but, you know, we're talking about further up the food chain. We're talking about the federal government, and they're doing nothing.
Yeah, well, there's there's a lot of stuff going on at the exact same time, so there's that. I just think, honestly, the public drives a lot of this, you know, and you have a huge percentage of the public that this does. Okay, this is not what I believe, but this is what I am told on a regular basis. It doesn't affect me, and I'm like, no, wait.
Well,
but it does.
Yeah, see that? Because I deal with DUI drivers all the time, and nobody wants to. They all want to believe it doesn't affect me. It does. My child would never.
Oh,
I'm like, well, my child was a passenger. He didn't drink, and he was killed. So don't ever say, even in this industry, that it would never affect you, because it will. Your grandchild, your child will be out on the road with a DUI driver. They will be handed something at school. Oh, just try it. It's good. Yeah. Don't ever.
Like in so many shows we've talked about before, it'll look like a gummy bear sitting on the counter of someone's home. And surprise.
Brownies.
It's not. It doesn't always have the smell. Like Yep. You know, when we were in high school, brownies, they smelled.
Yep.
I mean, there was a smell. You knew you were eating something that wasn't the real thing. But a lot of this stuff doesn't.
Nope.
It's in packages that looks like candy. Little kids are getting a hold of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look toward the grows, and for people who maybe are unfamiliar with the program, if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, on the top bar, click the tab that says pot, and we have a ton of photos on there, and those are local. So here in Northern California, where this stuff is grown, I mean, it's grown other places too, but the big growing sites here in Northern California, if you think for one second this isn't getting into your water table,
oh God,
the massive amounts of chemicals, you're looking at murder,
illegal
human trafficking, you're looking at chemicals that were banned in this country years ago. And, you know, if that doesn't move you, you know, they're skinning and eating dogs. So even if you just want to go there, maybe you think all this stuff is great. How do you feel about animals? You know, there's something to hate for everyone, pretty much. I'm a firm believer that there's something everyone will hate.
We foregoed forests for the spotted owl, but yet we can't do that the same way for these crows.
I think we can all agree as a group, including you.
Too far away.
I think we can all agree, Jesse, that the best eradication is prevention. And in a perfect world,
yep,
prevention will reduce the need, yep, for the thirst for the use of drugs in our society, and that will put the cartels out of business. And that's the other reason why the Chinese are spraying their marijuana now with fentanyl and other drugs, and the Mexicans are spraying it with fentanyl and other drugs, because they must addict the next generation and population.
Yep, and I do think if people knew that the chemicals that they were ingesting, I truly believe most of the people, just your casual users, have no clue.
Oh, God, no.
No, they think it's like candy with some drugs in it. And it's
well,
like,
and you're going to go into a pot shop. They're not going to tell you.
There's that. Do you guys have legalized marijuana in Texas, Trey?
I don't think so.
Medical.
There's no difference.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, yeah, from a, yeah.
So the camel's
you
nose is under the tent.
Yeah. I'm just, from a Texas perspective, quote unquote, medical is what you can get. They call it the teacup program, Texas Compassionate Use Program, which they actually expanded to try to get SBC, you know, the Senate Bill 3, the THC ban passed. But it didn't help.
Interesting.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. That's too bad, because there is no difference between medical marijuana and regular marijuana. And if they wanted to make it a distinction, I always said, then put it in the pharmacy and have it dosed to you for whatever ailment you're claiming. And they don't want that. They want to be able to go and buy it as much as they want. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an addiction at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, they have Marinol
yeah.
if they really
yeah.
need it. And I mean, the FDA dose, I think, is a maximum of 20 milligrams to 10 milligrams twice a day.
Yep.
I mean, they have a whole laundry list of side yep. effects on the, you know, if you look at the FDA literature for Marinol. But yeah, that's what I've always thought. If you really need this stuff, and it's sort of, Dr. Randall made a comment the other day, you know, it's sort of like a last tier, especially CBD, sort of the last line of defense. You know, if nothing else works, let's try this. The public's been hoodwinked at the end of the day. Just, again, y'all brought this up earlier. It's just tobacco. I know Kevin Sabet always says this, and he's absolutely right. It's just tobacco 2.0. Same, they even use the same terminology.
Yep.
"Quote unquote delivery device." Instead of a nicotine delivery device, it's a THC delivery device.
Jesse, I'm interested to know whether in your medical marijuana industry, there do they go all the way back to allow industrial grows that are tested? Do you see them like they are here in California, or is it just illegal stuff coming across from Oklahoma?
I can't comment on that. I don't know. I don't want to misstate anything. I mean, I really don't know. I haven't done any research on that.
If you were going to take a page from the playbook on, you know, just from your perspective, how they kind of beat Big Tobacco, you know, how that tide was turned. How does that apply here, or what would we look for next if we were going to try to support that?
You know, I'm going to use the word to fill drum. We need another Jeffrey Wigand. We need somebody high up the food chain in either the, you know, when I say cannabis industry, I'm referring to both marijuana and hemp industry. Somebody way up the food chain. It could be like a PhD chemist and said, you know, enough's enough. This is sick. I'm not going to do this anymore. And basically, you know, lay it out. You know, I thought Ann Hassel was going to be that quote unquote whistleblower, but for some reason, nobody listens to her. But some of the things that she, I think y'all may have interviewed her. I'm not sure. I thought you did. But yeah, some of the things that she exposes is just, it's again, insidious. I mean, how do we allow this? I don't know. They get more of a pass in the tobacco industry. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I know that we have like a minute and a half left or a minute. So rather than cut you off, we can keep talking till the end. But I thought we should thank you while we had time to do it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah,
Jay. Yeah, no problem. I'm the third. That's why I go by Jay.
Okay. Yeah, that is confusing.
Call me Jay. Yeah, that's why I'm Jay. That's the technical reason. I was number three. Yeah.
It's better than being called three, I guess.
I was glad to do it. Hopefully it wasn't over anybody's head. And, you know, if y'all need a replay or go over some other stuff, I'll be more than happy. Or have a, you know, have me and Dr. Finn and others as a kind of a panel asking questions or a Q&A.
Yeah, we're always up for it. There is not enough education going out about this, and it takes a little bit to get it out there. So I do hope people go and listen to the programming that's available, because we have a lot of amazing people on that list. And thank you for adding to our voices on this topic. We have to run away. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.